Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here Tuesday, August the 10th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. Just 16 minutes past the hour, and I greet you with a lot of news here this morning. This must be the morning of the oddities. Just the morning of the oddities. So let's get into it right away. As most of you know, every morning I go through McDonald's to get a drink. Well, this morning the line was moving fine and everything was good, and I think I got the correct change and everything was fine in that regard. But I get up to window number 2, which is the crucial window where they actually give you the soda. And I normally get a large Diet Coke. Well, this morning, what I got was a large regular Coke. Now, I know this does not seem like a big deal, and I'll drink it. You know, regular Coke's okay. But, you know, I always think when that happens, and I'm not diabetic, but I always think if you're diabetic or maybe you're on a diet or something of that nature, if they hand you a regular Coke, you know, that could be trouble. But I guess it always goes back to check it before you pull away from the window. But this morning I ended up with a regular Coke. You know, that has not happened in a very, very long time. So it's unfortunate it happened this morning, but like I said, I'll drink it anyway. No big issue, but no large Diet Coke this morning as we kick things off. Now, we're going to get back to talking about Old Marion. We had so much fun with that yesterday that we're going to continue that this morning, but there are a few other things I wanted to tell you about on this weird Tuesday morning. Now, I thought about this story that I'm going to tell, but, you know, it's just us having breakfast here every morning, and so I figure I'll tell this story, because I think it's strange, but I'll tell you why in just a second. It's a short story, but here's what happened last night. Last night, I ended up going to bed at about, let's say, 11 o'clock. It was somewhere around 11 o'clock. Now, right before I went to bed, I had some carbohydrate-free chocolate ice cream. Probably about 9:30, 10 o'clock, I had this. And it was very good. Had it with some whipped cream on top, Cool Whip. So I had this ice cream. Matter of fact, I had two bowls. So I go to bed. I had that at 10 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then I go to bed about 11. Well, at about 12:30, I wake up. And I know it's 12:30 because I looked at the clock. About 12:30, I wake up. And now, see, this is where it gets complicated, because I'm going to try to tell this story without being crude in any way. And it's not a crude story, but you just got to use the right terms. So about 12:30, I wake up last night, and I have to go to the facilities, the bathroom. A lot of people do this in the middle of the night. No big deal. So about 12:30, I get up, and I go over to the bathroom, and somehow, now this is the confusing part, somehow I fell asleep sitting on the commode. Now, in all my life, and I've been around a little while now, in all my life, I have never, I've fallen asleep a lot of places. I've fallen asleep in tents, campers, hotel rooms, cars, houses, beds, on the floor, outside. I've fallen asleep a lot. I might have even fallen asleep on a picnic table at one point or another. Or on a bench. Or on a up in the bleachers, I might have fallen asleep. I certainly probably have fallen asleep in a movie theater, as I'm not a big fan of movies. But I'm sure I fell asleep in school at some point. Probably fell asleep in college. But in my life, I've never fallen asleep on the commode. Now, I don't even know how this happens, because I remember going in there, and then, obviously, there was some kind of blackout, and I wake up, and I don't even think I was asleep that long, because I was back in bed fairly quickly, but I fell asleep on the commode. So here's what I've decided, and no other, let me tell you this, no other talk show host anywhere in the world would tell you this. And I know that there are talk show hosts falling asleep on the commode somewhere in this world. But no other talk show host would tell you this. But I will tell you this because I feel a kinship between you and I, the listening audience, to feel safe to tell you that this is what happened last night. But this is what I feel now. I feel like I'm 10 steps away from the nursing home. I feel that this is where I'm headed at this point when you start falling asleep on the commode. So there you go. Well, so far, that's the news this morning. Back to you, Jody. If anybody has anything to say before I get into the next thing here about McDonald's or the old commode, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz. And hold on, we are going to get back to Old World Marion here in just a second, because that is funny. People now are hearing what happened last night, sending me messages where I fell asleep. Okay, in any event. Oh, then on this weird morning, after last night, you know, falling asleep on the commode and then getting a regular soda at McDonald's this morning, I'm turning over here on South Prospect Street off of Washington Avenue. Now, I've been here now, what, 4, 5 months, something like that? Well, let's take the phone call, then we'll come back to this. Go ahead, caller.
That was a funny story, Scott.
Well, you know, I all the way over here this morning, I debated telling it or not.
Takes a big man to admit to something like that.
Well, it does, and you know, I think I don't even know how it happened, because...
Do you take sleep aids?
What's that?
Do you take sleep aids?
No. I don't have any sleeping pills, or I don't even take that. What is that? Echinacea or Propecia or whatever these people take at night.
I mean, you should have melatonin.
Melatonin? No, I don't take any melatonin.
Wow.
Yeah, now see, there you go. That's the response I figured. Wow. Because how did he fall asleep on the commode?
I've done a lot of things, but I've never done that.
See, you've never done that.
No.
This is why I feel I might be close to the end here, being put away.
Nah, you're too young for that.
What if I just fell off? See, now that would have been bad.
Yeah. Now, I have been setting up and fell asleep and almost fallen over. I have done that, but never in the bathroom, though.
No. Well, see, I've never fallen asleep at the wheel. I've never fallen asleep like that. I've never had that sensation. But I don't know if it's because I was already tired, or because I had already been asleep, or what it was.
You must have been sleeping really good.
Huh?
You must have been sleeping really good to do that.
Well, I must have been. And I don't think I was asleep there very long.
Yeah.
I just think that I dozed back off. And then, obviously, that's probably not a comfortable position to sleep in. So, you know, woke up.
Never done it.
Yeah, we have to try it sometime.
No, I have back problems. If I go in there for too long, my legs go numb, and I almost can't get up.
Well, you know, maybe that's the problem. Maybe I'm just too comfortable wherever I am.
No, that could be. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to come up here in a little bit and get them tickets. This is Scott.
Yeah.
I tried to get them tickets yesterday, but it didn't happen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, come on up. I'll be here till 10.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye. All right, well, Scott's going to come up and get his tickets here. But, yeah, you know, and see, there you go. A gentleman who's never had this problem, falling asleep on the commode. But there you go, 740-383-9944. Okay, I turned onto Prospect Street this morning from Washington Avenue. And, you know, we've been here since April the 1st. I think was the first day we came here, April the 1st. So it's been 4 months now, something like that. And I've never seen this before. You know, there's a turnstile not too far from where we are, a quarter of a mile from where we are. There's a turnstile. So I turned onto South Prospect here, and you never really look down the... You don't look to your left because South Prospect's a one-way street. So I... Well, South Prospect's a one-way street where we are. So I turn left, and all of a sudden, I see this gigantic box truck. It's just a big, white box truck. Now, I don't even know how this happened. It was in the turnstile, pointed the wrong direction. Now, not the straight part of the turnstile, the curvy part. Which, I don't understand that, because isn't that little road there that takes you from South Prospect back to Delaware Avenue, isn't that one way? I think it is. I've never seen a car going the opposite direction on that little street. So I'm not even sure how the box truck would have done that. Unless it came through the turnstile from the other direction, and then somehow, I don't know, hung a U-turn to get in the curvy side of the turn section. But anyway, he's pointed the wrong, huge box truck, he's pointed the wrong way in the turnstile, and he continues on down South Prospect. It could have been a disaster here this morning. All right, let's go to the phone. Well, if that was you, give us a call back, 740-383-9944. If that was you, give us a buzz back here this morning. We'd love to hear from you, 740-383-9944. But so he just continues on through the turnstile there, going the wrong direction, and he ended up going to where Ann's Carryout used to be right next here, and he turned into the little parking area that's there, and he said, well, I think I'm going the wrong way. And then he straightened himself up, and I think he got going the right way. But I have no idea how this happened, but that could have been a huge, huge disaster here on South Prospect Street this morning, because this was a huge white box truck. And if he had continued on down South Prospect Street, or if there had been any traffic going the correct way on South Prospect Street, that would have been a disaster. Now, I was also told this morning that there was a lot of action here on South Prospect right before I got here. Police cars and ambulances and things of that nature. Does anybody know what's going on South Prospect Street, or at least by way of South Prospect Street this morning? Give me a buzz here, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. The phone lines are open. 14 minutes into this show this morning, 29 minutes past the hour. If you have anything to say about the regular soda at McDonald's, or the whole commode incident this morning, or the one-way street incident here on South Prospect. But it goes back to the one-way streets here in Marion again. What in the world is going on there? It confuses people. It confuses out-of-towners. And I have to believe this guy was an out-of-towner driving a big white box truck like that. So there you have it. Now, as I came into the studio this morning, one of our listeners was here, and he dropped off a newspaper. Now, let me get the date on this newspaper. This is kind of interesting, because of all the stuff we've been talking about here the last couple days. This newspaper is from, let's get the date here. This newspaper is from February, it's a Marion Star, February 25th, 1965. Thursday, February 25th, 1965. Now, this is a big, thick paper. Now, the headline that day was, "No Negotiations Authorized, White House Denies Call for Vietnam Settlement." Now, there's local news in this paper. On the bottom half of the first page, there's a headline here, and it says, "Case Closed, Daughter Implies. Phillips Heir Pays Claims, Will Get Harding's Letters." Now, I had never really heard this story, so let's learn here together this morning. And by the way, give me a buzz, 740-383-9944, if you have anything to say, 31 minutes past the hour. So, here's the story. Whether a packet of letters written to the late Mrs. James Carey Phillips by President Warren G. Harding will reveal any deep dark secrets regarding the 29th president's personal or public life rests now with Mrs. Phillips' daughter, Mrs. Isabel Maffey of Genoa City, Wisconsin. Action in Marion's probate court Wednesday resulted in a directive to Paul D. Michael, administrator of the Phillips estate, to turn the 250 letters over to Mrs. Maffey. The order came after Mrs. Maffey, or a representative, advanced $7,829 owed by the Phillips estate and in debts incurred with regard to legalities involving the letters. The Phillips estate probate court spokesman said the mourning is now closed. Okay. What ultimately, if anything, will be done with the letters, no one can say. Miss Maffey reached this morning by telephone, said she did not care to comment on the matter, and her attorney in Marion, John K. Bartram of Bartram and Jenkins, said he had nothing to add to her comments. Therefore, it is conceivable to conclude that the letters, insofar as the general public is concerned, will bring no revelations. The letters came to light back in July 1964. Francis Russell, a contributing editor to the American Heritage Historical Magazine, revealed excerpts allegedly taken from some of the letters and subsequently was named as one of the defendants in the $1 million lawsuit filed by Harding Heirs. The letters were turned over to Marion Probate Court, where they remained until Wednesday's final action ordered that they be given to Mrs. Maffey. The letter's value was appraised at $15,000 by three experts appointed by the court. From a list of nine names supplied by Charlton Myers, court-appointed legal counsel for Mr. Michael, the court appointed as the administrator of the Phillips estate were chosen Ralph Newman, proprietor of the Abraham Lincoln Bookstore in Chicago, David Randall, librarian at the Little Library, University of Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana, and Colton Storm, curator of the Newberry Library, also in Chicago. The court costs paid by Mrs. Maffey or a representative included $854 owed for the care of Mrs. Phillips in her later years, $3,000 in court costs, attorney's fees and administrative fees, and $900 in appraisal fees, a total of $7,829. Mrs. Phillips, to whom the letters were addressed between 1909 and 1920, died in 1960. Many of the letters were written on official stationery of the U.S. Senate. They were discovered in a shoebox in the Phillips home. Mrs. Phillips spent her last days in an institution for the aged maintained by public welfare. Now hold on, I've got to go to page number 14 for the continuation of this story. But isn't this interesting? Now this is President Harding's mistress, And of course, we now know what happened with these letters. But let me see if I can get to page 14 here. This is when a paper was actually pretty sizable. Okay, let's see here. There's page 14. Let's see if we can find the rest of the Phillips case here. Okay, letters. Here we go. The above debt of... Okay, well, here we go. Mr. Phillips was co-owner of Marion's Euler Phillips department store. Russell interviewed after he made public portions of several of the letters and became a defendant in legal action, is alleged to have declared that internal evidence in the Phillips letters lent credence to the charge that Harding was in fact the father of a child born to Nan Britton. Well, we know that ended up to be true. Okay, as things stand now, the case of the Harding to Cary Phillips letters is closed. Principals in the proceedings of recent months have indicated that the letters will be forgotten, and perhaps toward the end they will be destroyed. Well, that didn't happen either. If that evolves, one can only speculate, for the most part, what the letters really said, and speculation proves not a thing one way or the other. So that was the story in the Marion Star, February 25th, 1965, the day after my birthday, the day of my grandparents' wedding anniversary, 1965. Now, what we do know is that Francis Russell, I guess, was right in a way, because Nan Britton was the father of President Harding's child, and we do know that they were love letters, but they were not destroyed. So, there you go. That's 1965. Now, here's what has always puzzled me, and I don't understand this. Because this is recent times. What is 1965? 50-something years ago? 60-something? 60. Well, not quite 60 yet, but getting there. So, Cary Phillips lived in Marion. I believe she lived over on Mount Vernon Avenue. Now, all this hoopla going on about letters and being President Harding's mistress and, you know, the letters, all this stuff. Did anybody know Cary Phillips? Because it's quite conceivable that if you are in your 60s, 70s, 80s, or even 90s now, you would have lived here the same time that Cary Phillips would have. Or your parents would have. Or your grandparents would have. Does anybody remember anything about Cary Phillips? Did anybody ever see her? Did the woman ever leave her house? And you might have worked in the convalescent home that she was in. Did anybody out there work in a, I guess what would have been a nursing home where she ended up in the final days of her life? I don't know. Give me a buzz here. 740-383-9944. 38, coming up on 39 minutes past the hour. But that's the story as we have it, as it relates to the love letters of Warren Harding and Cary Phillips, which... you know, her daughter, who I think has long gone on to her reward, Mrs. Maffey, I guess was her name, but I don't know what became of her. I guess she didn't live here, though. So there's a good chance that that might have been part of the problem there, that she did not live here. But did anybody ever have any run-ins or hear any stories or anything about Cary Phillips from your ancestors, I guess it would be at this point? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Give me a buzz here. Now, something else interesting about this newspaper is there are a lot of advertisements in here for businesses, and obviously businesses in Marion, because that's where this paper was published, the Marion Star. So let's go to some of these businesses and see what people actually remember here. Okay, here's one for you. Schaffner's. Now, Schaffner's has a big, big add-in here. Schaffner's Dependable Furniture since 1866. Or was it Schaffner's? It's C-S-C-H-A-F-F-N-E-R-S. Now, here's one for you. Does anybody know where Schaffner's or Schaffner's was located? Now, you don't have to give me the exact address. Just give me the street. Does anybody know where Schaffner's Dependable Furniture was located? The street. And if you get this right, I'll enter you in a competition here this morning. We might do this. You don't have to get the exact address, but if you get the street, I'll enter. Let's see how good you are on Marion history. And does anybody have any memories of Schaffner's Dependable Furniture? Now, the ad reads, beautifully styled seven-piece grouping. The decorator-directed group brings home style and comfort. All right, let's see if this person knows it. All right, go ahead, caller.
Hi, this is Bob Welsh.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. I've been listening to the show, and I want to thank you again for the interview, and it was really enjoyable. I'm getting a lot of feedback here from people who didn't hear about the book 25 years ago, but they're finally getting it, so... The power of radio.
See, now, the people doubt the power of radio versus newspaper, but I'm glad we were able to revive it for you.
But I think I have an answer for you as well from yesterday.
Oh, go ahead.
You asked about the Pizza Villa, and their address was 127 South Main Street.
Oh, really? So they were on Main Street?
Yes.
So not over here. Well, I guess this Topped is on Main Street now that I think about it. But the last time you were here, was the building still there for Pizza Villa?
We didn't drive by it, so I can't tell you the answer to that.
But I
know that because I'm looking at a 1981 phone book that I used for some of my research.
Well, did Pizza Villa have an ad in the Yellow Pages?
Yes, they did. I'm looking at the 1980-81 phone book.
Because I'm curious as to why the Pizza Villa is not remembered as well as other places are.
I don't know. I've been looking at their ad here, and they have the cold beer to go, so I think that would be a big drawing card for them, for anybody, I guess.
That's a good selling point.
Here, so we didn't have that, but... I know a lot of people would deliver beer, so that was always a big drawing card for some of the pizza places.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Now, Bob, like I said, we're down. I think we have one book left here. Now, there are books over at the Historical Society, right?
Right. As well as at the website, cpiepot@yahoo.com, they can contact me. And actually, some people have contacted me just to talk about old times and everything, so that's always nice to hear.
Good. I'm glad to hear that's all going well.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad people can still get the book, because I know people have they've taken them as prizes and so on and so forth. And, you know, they're reading them and finding it very interesting. As we said, one of our callers yesterday, I don't know if you heard it, Ralph Thacker, said that he was a driver there toward the end. And he pretty much had the same things to say about Charlie that everybody else did.
Yeah. And speaking of which, I know when Eric was there, he talked a lot about his driving prowess and everything, and how he would zip through the streets and alleys of the Marion there. I think what he failed to mention, too, that he also had a fuzzbuster, a radar detector in the car.
That does help.
That does help.
Well, hey, Bob.
I got a ticket, so that was a big help for him.
Well, I bet. I think that it's... do you know when the 30 minutes was done away with? Because when Ralph was in yesterday, he said he didn't remember the 30-minute idea. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me, what exactly was the commissary?
The commissary was the building, or, you know, the place where the food prep was done, where they made the dough from scratch. They sliced pepperoni and cheese and shredded cheese, and just made all the products that would then be put on the pizza and subs later in the day. So that was basically the kitchen for, you know, the raw products.
Now, the recipe for the pizza sauce, now that's in the book, is it not?
It might be. It was basically a canned product that we added spices to, oregano and Italian seasoning.
Now,
it might be in the book.
Was it just kind of an eyeball thing, or did you have to get it to the right taste, or were there measurements?
There were measurements, we expected, you know, the commissary people to follow them, and you know, because they have a consistent product. But I believe it might, you know, we put in 2 cans of the sauce. I think maybe a quarter cup of the oregano and Italian seasonings. And the key was to let it melt overnight, because I mean you have to have those spices soak into the sauce.
That's interesting. Well, Bob, I'm glad to hear that there's some feedback, and I'm glad to hear you're still out there listening.
Still am. The online connection here is great. You know, and I probably have a lot larger audience than you ever expected, but it's a good thing.
I bet so. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bob Welsh, the listening in Columbus, Ohio, the author of Three Pies Hot. We're great that his appearance here has now sparked interest in his book. I really, really like that because it's a great, great book. Go ahead, caller.
Was a Schaffner's right there on the corner of South Main Street and State where the little park is now?
Well, it's interesting. The ad says 164 South Main. Now, I don't know if that's a corner or not, but it was definitely on South Main, so it would have
right.
been down toward this end.
The what?
I said, so it would have been down toward this end of Main Street.
Right, and I'm sure it used to be right there at the corner of Main Street and where you turn on to Church Street.
Now, what kind of store was shop? I mean, obviously furniture, but was it a big, and this is a big ad in the newspaper.
Well, you could buy records in there and furniture and I'm not sure what else.
So it was kind of a department store back in those days.
Right.
Interesting. All right, is this Judy?
Yes, it is.
All right, Judy, got you in the competition. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, yes, yeah, Schaffner's was at, I thought it was pronounced Schaffner's. I don't know how they get Schaffner's out of an A in the word, but there you go. Schaffner's was 164 South Main Street. Okay, let's go on to the next business here that I have. Now, we were talking about lumber companies yesterday. Now, let's see if anybody remembers this one. It was Cashway Lumber Company. Cashway Lumber Company. Does anybody remember where that was here in Marion? Cashway Lumber Company. All right, go ahead, caller.
Good morning. My brother and sister-in-law got married in 65, and at that time they got 3 rooms of furniture at Schaffner's. It would be a couch, a chair, coffee table, 2 end tables, 2 lamps, a bed, chest of drawers, and a dresser, and a kitchen table, and 4 chairs for one money.
Really?
Yes, and my sister-in-law still has the bedroom suit.
So it's held up?
Well, she's very, very protective. She's a very good housekeeper. That might help. But I do know that they got all 3 rooms when they got married, and it was for one money. I think he worked, I'm not sure where he worked at the time. But anyways, that is for a fact. And I do know, also, I have gotten, saved my Marion Stars when all 3 of my kids were born, on the day they were born. And when I gave my daughter her, when she was 50 years old, and her kids looked at that and said they had the ads for the cars and so on and so forth. Now, it was a chunk of Marion Star.
Well, there, that's what I'm looking at this. And
yes, it was a Marion Star. You didn't read it just in a whip stitch. But I know times have changed, and be it for the better or not, but that's the way it is. I wanted to share with you about their furniture when they got married.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. Well, what I noticed about this morning was just the first section of this paper is 16 pages of news.
Yes.
16 pages. And, you know, I don't think news has went down any hill, anyway, and I wonder what news is not being covered now just because we don't have the hands to do it.
Well, that's the thing, and people says, well, there's nothing in it. Well, if you don't have subscribers, you don't have money coming in. If you don't have money coming in, you're not going to pay for reporters. And apparently we have two reporters in Marion, in the Marion Star.
That's my understanding, and that's unfortunate because they really are doing the best they can. I know they work very hard to turn out a paper every day, and I can't imagine how two people are doing that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think, I forget what day it was that I was reading the Marion, because I still get it. I still support them. But it seems to me like there was not one article on the front page by a local reporter.
Well, you know what's weird? Every day I will walk to a newspaper rack, and they're in Marion. We usually have the Dispatch, the Star, and the USA Today. And maybe 2 days out of the five or seven of the week, you will see the exact same article by the exact same author on the front page of all three papers.
Uh-huh.
And I think, wow.
Well, it's all because of the digital times and so forth. And like I keep saying, little did we know that I'm 78, but little did we know I was living in the good old days.
Well, being 78, do you? What is your thought on why nobody knew Carrie Phillips?
Things were a lot more private then. I mean, somebody, you know, the news or whatever didn't jump. Like I said, things were, and people had their privacy, and it wasn't. They weren't selling papers with the smut that they can dig up. I just think that people was a little bit more conscious of somebody's privacy, and now there is no privacy.
Now, did people in those days know, I know she was on Mount Vernon Avenue, but I don't, do people know where she, did they know where she lived? Because she was also not only just a mistress, but she was a big wife of a big, big businessman.
Well, yeah, but I don't think we had to smear that across the front page like we do now. I lived in Marion from 61 to 66. I was a telephone operator at General Telephone during the big oil bust in Mount Gilead.
You know, people, George Kasotis is the only person I've ever talked about that. What was that all about? They found oil in Mount Gilead, so all these people converged on Marion and Mount Gilead. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And how bad was it being a telephone operator?
Oh, it wasn't bad. It's quite interesting. You know, there's a lot of things we listened in on that we shouldn't have been listening in on. And the only way that we would know is if the supervisor come up and took her headset and plugged into your unit. But otherwise, and I'll tell you, it was pretty good at night. And I usually had to work nights because everything was on a, you know, however long you'd been there. That's how they based it. And I worked split shift for years because that's what you got. And you'd go in 11 and work till, or go, yeah, 10 to 2, and then 6 to 11 or 6 to 10 or something. Anyway, but yes, it was quite interesting. Even what all went on at the hotels and the motels and so forth, it was just like the Wild West.
Well, now, for people who don't, because this is a lost art, we don't have this anymore. How did this work? What did a telephone operator do?
Well, the calls came in on little lights, just like you see in TV or on shows. And everybody sat at the boards, like it shows. And when a light came on, you took one plug, because you always have two cords. One you would answer the call with, you'd plug in with that. And then you would take the call. And then you would, the other one, you would put in another socket, which would send, and then you would ring the number. And shut the key, and that sent the call through. And I know one time there was a lady that had worked there for years, and she always liked to work on the information part, because then you'd have these big, big round old carousels like that had all the numbers in there. And it was somebody's job to keep changing those, taking them out and putting in new ones and whatever. And I remember one lady called, somebody called her and wanted to know such and such a number, and she gave it to him. And he says, operator, could you dial that for me? And she says, not from this position. He says, oh, operator, what position are you in? And we, you know, you had to find something to be funny. But it was a big time. I know when I was hired there, they hired a bunch of operators to take care of the traffic at the telephone company. I mean, there was, I suppose we would probably have at least 25 or 30 sitting at boards taking calls.
Well, I would think, you know, because every call had to be placed that way in Marion, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's
would...
when you had pay phones, too. And you learned when they dropped the coins what a nickel sounded like, what a dime sounded like, and what a quarter sounded like. And so you would know, you know, if you'd said the call was 55 cents, you would know if it was two quarters and a nickel, because you could tell by the sounds of them. And if they didn't give you the right money, you didn't place the call.
That's fascinating. Now, do you know why they were charging for long distance?
Well, because we didn't have anyone paying for it through a monthly bill, I suppose. So that took care of, you know, it wasn't like you had a, could call, like now, you can call any place in the world for a fee. Well, that wasn't when you had pay phones. And now there's not a payphone to be found.
No, it's interesting. But before I let you go, what's the, obviously we wouldn't know the names, but what's the most interesting call you ever listened in on?
Well, we won't give names, but there was a couple gentlemen that liked each other, and they would have some pretty interesting, not only verbal conversations, but they were, in the 65, it was unknown for two gentlemen to be specific, significant others. And they were two businessmen in town.
Oh.
And boy, once that came through, the word went down the board, hey, plug it into 42, plug it into 42.
Now, let me ask you this without giving their names. Would they be names that we would know?
At that time, you would have.
So they were well-known business people.
Yeah. And then when, if you happen to see them on the street, it's all you could do to keep from, you know, snickering, knowing what was going on behind the scenes. And a lot of this stuff, or people that would be from out of town, staying at the Harding Hotel, and they would be placing calls to someplace, and we'd listen to those. You know, we weren't supposed to, you know. And usually the supervisor got wise to it, you know, and she didn't want us to, but she knew everybody was doing it. And so, yeah, you would then they'd send calls to Oklahoma, you know, wherever. But there was a lot of smut went on then. It just didn't make the papers.
Well, that's interesting. Well, hey, thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, now that's fascinating. Now, we got a couple minutes left here in this hour. Well, see, back in 65, people who say that same-sex whatever is a new thing, clearly not. It just was going on the phone lines back in the 60s. Now, where was Cashway Lumber Company? Does anybody know where Cashway Lumber Company is? They got a halfway decent ad here. They were open from 7:30 in the morning till 5:30 in the evening. Haul your own and save. Closed all day Sunday. Hauling available at very reasonable prices. Guaranteed. Every day is savings day at Cashway. And everything is guaranteed to please. Does anybody know what street or where Cashway Lumber Company was located? 740-383-9944. It would have been around in 1965. 740-383-9944. Now, I'm going to throw an easy one in here as well. Maybe we'll find Cashway Lumber Company. Oh, this is so good. The Royal Buffet. Where was the Royal Buffet? Back by popular demand, Friday carryout special, fish sandwiches with tartar sauce in a bag to go, 5 fish sandwiches, okay, pint of dairy freeze, free, with the purchase of the above special Dairy Freeze made with Borden's Dairy Mix. This special good Friday, February 26th only at the Royal Buffet. No need to phone. Where was the Royal Buffet located? Okay, hold on to that thought. Where was the Royal Buffet located? And where was Cashway Lumber Company located? Hang on, we're going to be back here in 15 minutes with those answers. Stay tuned.
That I have ever talked to, and I can tell you, I won't name names, but there are people who have been in Hollywood and had a great career who are not as kind as you might think they are. This woman exceeds the kindness that you might think she would be.